This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
As a guy who learned the hard way how important proper nutrition is on your health and the great harm excess weight can have on your health, I urge you to get serious about your health with simpletolose.com. Diets don't work, and you're really only going to be successful losing weight when you learn how to eat differently. And that is why the free health coaches at Simple to Lose are so helpful. They teach you how to eat six meals a day and why it works. Many people on my team are working with Simple to Lose and their health coaches. As a team, we've lost over 850 pounds. Mary has lost over 85 pounds and wants to live a long life to keep her family strong. Brad's lost 40 pounds, finally feels like he did when he was in his 30s. Chris, whose father died young due to obesity, has lost 100 pounds and is off most of his medications. Change your life, get healthy, and thrive today. Go to simpletolose.com today, not tomorrow. Go today. Simpletolose.com.
Results do vary. Typical weight loss is 2 to 5 pounds per week for the first 2 weeks, then 1 to 2 pounds per week thereafter.
Prepare yourself to ingest current events, pop culture, and politics with a side of Latin flair.
Vaches. I don't have to show you any stinking vaches.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
We are assembled here today to pay final respects to our honored dead. And yet it should be noted that in the midst of our sorrow, this death takes place in the shadow of new life, the sunrise of a new world, a world that our beloved comrade gave his life to protect and nourish. He did not feel this sacrifice a vain or empty one. And we will not debate his profound wisdom at these proceedings. Of my friend, I can only say this. Of all the souls I have encountered in my travels, his was the most human.
Others?
That is the death scene of Commander Spock in Wrath of Khan, Star Trek II. The Wrath of Khan. Leonard Nimoy, the actor who made Spock a household name, passed away yesterday. And being a sci-fi buff that I am, having Star Trek being so much an influence on not only my entertainment, but also some of the creative juices that lend themselves to this program, I couldn't help but start off the program with being a little retrospective about Leonard Nimoy and what he left us. Scott, I have an engineer here who just happens to be named Scotty. How about that? I was saying that because I was telling you how we were going to start the show, and I said Scotty, and I'm like, Scotty, of course, you know, beam me up, Scotty. Everybody knows the iconic words. Everybody knows the famous eyebrow raise and the catchphrase fascinating or illogical, and it's just what a sad day for those who not just sci-fi buffs. I mean, can we stipulate that, Scotty, that Leonard Nimoy, I mean, he did In Search Of, he was the narrator of that program, it's way before your time, but he did his body of work was more than just Spock, but he was able to continue on and do other things and still maintain a love and devotion from a fan base for what really launched him into stardom. And he never seemed to be resentful of that role of Spock. So many actors do that when they have a defining character that they can't break out of. They look at it as a cage. And I never got that sense from Leonard Nimoy. I don't know whether or not he ever resented Spock and that character, but it served him well over these years. Even the reboot, he was in the reboot, for crying out loud. It's just what a gift the actor was to be able to bring a character like that alive. So, and you know what, here you are, what are you, high 20s, right?
I'm 28, yeah.
28. And here I am in mid 40s. And you and I both know the impact of Leonard Nimoy.
Absolutely.
So very few actors are able to span generations, to span mediums, and actually invent and reinvent and then reinvent again. I mean, he had the series with the other crew. He did the movies, and then he did more movies, and he was on the Next Generation. I mean, the iconic character of Spock has come out of a genre which is sci-fi, and is now Americana. It's something it was American created, and it belongs to America, and it's something we can be proud of, because folks over in Japan know who Spock is. So I just and the character, thank goodness, is in good hands with the Star Trek reboot. But I just thought I'd start the show because I'm, as you all know, as the author of Liberty Rises, I am a huge sci-fi fan. And the passing of somebody as iconic as Leonard Nimoy just cannot lead a program without paying some sort of tribute to the greatness of the actor, the greatness of the character, and the endurance of that character.
I thought it was interesting in the next scene after that funeral, McCoy has a great line that I think really resonates well with the situation that we're in right now. And he says, as they're looking at the Genesis planet, he says, you know, he's not really dead as long as we remember him. And so I thought that was very touching. I watched The Wrath of Khan last night in honor of Leonard, and I thought
I thought that
line was very touching.
Well, it was. You know, maybe I should have included that. DeForest Kelly, of course, we lost DeForest Kelly, and we've lost James Doohan. That would be McCoy and Scotty. You know that Doohan's son is playing his father's role in an online reboot of Star Trek.
You know, I've seen some of that. It's not bad.
No, it isn't. And it's all volunteer. You know that? Nobody's getting paid for that. What do they call it? A phase two?
Yeah, it's like Star Trek Continued, I think it's called.
Yeah, it's gone through several different incarnations. They've called it phase two. There are different fan... They actually have recreated the set. The original Star Trek set, the ongoing missions, the 1960s set, not the 80s, 70s, 80s films. And it's actually not bad sci-fi. The acting it has strong points and it has some weak points.
Absolutely.
I've reached out to these folks, try to get them on not only this show, but also the Houston show, just to give them some publicity, because not everybody knows they're out there. I mean, you've really got to be a Star Trek fan to find these people.
But you do. Yeah, you absolutely do.
Let me see if I have a link stored for these individuals. I probably don't. It was probably my. For those of you who don't know, my computer crashed at the end of last year, so I had to replace everything. And I think with that went this Star Trek link that I had on here. But it's a quick search, continuing missions or phase two or whatever, what have you. You'll be able to find. I'll do that right now. Hold on a second. Let me get. Jump here on the computer. Star Trek Phase. That I think that's what it's called. Phase Two. It's spelled PHASE, and this is one of those. This is one of those sites. And you know what? Excuse me. This isn't the one that James Doohan is associated with. There's another one. So there's a Phase Two, and there's another one where James Doohan's son is playing the role of Scotty. So there are different. There are different voyages going on out there, continuing the vision of Gene Roddenberry, who, of course, was the creator of Star Trek. Did you know the original season only lasted 3 years? Three years.
They were really long seasons, but yeah, only 3 years. And then when you look at the rest of the series, each of them went 8+. Next Gen, I think, almost made it to 10.
No, it was 7.
It was seven, okay.
7 years for Next Gen, 7 years for Deep Space Nine, 7 years for Voyager. And then Enterprise was the only one that only made it 4 seasons. I think they had run out of steam, if you will, on that branch of the Star Trek franchise. They didn't let it die. They just rebooted it. And so everything starts fresh. That's why I thought the brilliance of the new movies was that they gave us a fresh perspective. Some of those fans have a hard time saying, wait, everything that we have in the Star Trek universe has just been changed, meaning it's not all the same. Deep Space Nine in particular. And I'm introducing my kids to Star Trek. They've watched Deep Space Nine. They loved those characters. Now they're watching Voyager. And I got to admit, I wasn't a huge Voyager fan, but as I'm watching it again, I'm coming around. What Kate Mulgrew did as the female captain of the Starship Voyager. She did a good job. Now that I'm looking back on it, she did a great job of character development. So, okay, I promise you I am not going to geek out and talk about sci-fi all show long. I just wanted to start off, as you know, something near and dear to my heart, and also pay homage to a great actor, someone who is who will go down as being iconic in Americana, and that is Leonard Nimoy and the character he created in Spock. Today we have plenty to talk about on the program. I have an interview that I conducted with Louis Gohmert that I want you to hear. That's coming up. Also, national security concerns, and in a full hour, folks, I'm devoting the entire second hour to solutions to Obamacare, ways to beat Obamacare. And I've assembled a panel I think will go a long way into helping us take a step in that right direction. There are some things you need to know, some revelations I've come up with in recent days that shows that Obamacare was so much more insidious than we actually thought, because they constructed the law anticipating freedom-loving folks like you and me trying to find ways around the law. And they conspired and they cooked up parts of this legislation to make sure we couldn't get out of government's grip. And that's why it's so insidious. We got that. And what if Obamacare is these subsidies being disseminated into the states by the, at the federal level without federal exchanges? What if it's ruled unconstitutional? Where do we go from there? All coming up on the Saturday edition of the Salcedo Show here on The Blaze. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show. Only on The Blaze Radio Network. Listening to the Latino conservative Chris Salcedo on the Blaze Radio Network.
Wait, is his name Christopher Doohan? I just one of the Salcedo Show listeners just sent me a friend request on Facebook. By the way, Facebook page is the Chris Salcedo Show. Folks, go ahead and find it and like it. Chris Doohan. I think his name is Chris Doohan. Thank you. Who did that? Who referred that? I already sent the request, so the person who did that for me, I can't see it. Okay. Well, anyway, this is great. Thanks, guys. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I felt a little geeky leading the show off with my love for Star Trek and sci-fi in general. You know, we were talking about the short duration of Star Trek, only three seasons. That was epic compared to Battlestar Galactica, the original Battlestar Galactica. You remember, it was one season and that puppy was off the air. And it was a million. Okay, today, by today's standards, it's nothing. But back then, late 1970s, early 1980s, $1 million an episode was unheard of. And they went out number one in their time slot. Really ticked a lot of people off, ABC's decision to do that. But I guess they couldn't make the dollars and cents work. And, you know, I'm actually, let me transition as we're talking about dollars and cents. Talking with Governor Scott Walker, my pick for president, at least to be on the ticket this time around in 2016. Combination of Cruz, maybe Martinez, maybe Walker would be fantastic as far as I was concerned. Anyway, he said something in his CPAC speech that got a lot of liberals. What? Did he just compare us to Al-Qaeda? Yeah, he did. Yeah. Governor Scott Walker basically said, look, if I can stand up against 100,000 left-wing protesters, I think I'll be okay against Al-Qaeda. And all the left-wing just went, oh, how could you make that comparison? Well, when you're a man who has had his wife threatened by left-wingers, several threats that came into to the attention of the police department, and several threats on his person and his sons and his parents and his wife. some threatening, quote, to gut his wife like a deer. So let's see. Gut one's wife like a deer, slice somebody's head off. Gut one's life like a one's wife like a deer and burn one alive. There doesn't seem to be any large area in between some liberals' solutions up in Wisconsin and radical Islamic fundamentalist terrorists. They were so crazed up in Wisconsin, the liberal left-wing nutcases, that they would threaten a man's wife to gut her like a deer. I'm sorry, but maybe everybody said, Scott Walker stumbled on this one. I don't think he did. I don't think he did at all. As a matter of fact, I think the left-wingers need to be confronted with their violent nature, their totalitarian nature, their predisposition to empowering government to lord over all of us, as we saw this week. Team Obama, as we tried to warn you on this program, folks, it wouldn't have mattered if you didn't go and make public comment on the ATF's website. Don't worry, they weren't going to listen to you anyway. The fix was in. Team Obama wanted to restrict ammunition, and they did. They banned AR-15 ammunition. The FCC, in case you were logged on and lodged a complaint against the federal takeover, the Obamacare-like takeover of the internet by the federal government, don't worry, they weren't going to listen to you anyway, because leftists don't listen to we the people. They do what they do for themselves, for our own good, because they know better. They're the smart people, mind you. So I don't want to say that it didn't do any good. I'm just saying that frankly, leftists don't listen. You needed to go through the exercise to make sure that what they were doing, you let them know that it was on your radar screen. But don't feel bad. Team Obama wasn't going to listen to you anyway, because you're just the people. They don't give two rats about you. So I'm going back and forth with somebody online about this. It was Corey Emberson. Thank you. Thank you, Corey. That was who let me know who James Doohan was. James Doohan's son was, Christopher Doohan. Anyway, so I'm in this debate with this left-winger online about this situation with Walker, and somehow we got off on journalism. Now, we know how this is all going to be portrayed in the left-wing press, right? This is going to outrageous, outlandish. They will not give you the perspective, Scott Walker's perspective, that had his wife, his children, his parents threatened by the extremist left wing. Violence, just like radical Islamic fundamentalists threaten us with beheading and burning if we don't convert to Sharia law. Here are the left wingers in America threatening bodily harm and violence to those who put up legislation and policies that are counter to their agendas. It's very similar. So I don't think Scott Walker overstepped at all. But here's this debate. How will the press cover it? And this left-winger's comments in the wake of the Brian Williams fiasco. By the way, this program, the antidote to the Brian Williams press. She was saying the journalism is dead, and on that we can agree. She blames, of course, corporate interests. I blame government interests, because the left-wing press has sold out to this idea of the all-powerful government. Very interesting discussion between O'Reilly and Britt Hume on this. Have a listen.
But I'm getting so sick of it, and I don't think the Republican contenders, any of them, are going to get a fair shot in the national media. They're going to tear them all down.
It has been this way to a considerable extent for a long time. I must say, Bill, that there are examples of fair and balanced reporting being done even by the New York Times. The New York Times, by the way, had a fair piece about Columba Bush over the weekend. The Washington Post did a much more harder edge piece about her spending habits. Dan Baltz of the Washington Post had a good piece over the weekend about Scott Walker. So there are examples of fair and balanced reporting. But I always thought, Bill, that if we at Fox News succeeded and drew an audience and became successful, that our competitors in print and in broadcast would look at us and say, what are they doing right? Maybe we need to be more balanced in our coverage. And I thought that our competitive advantage might prove perishable. But that hasn't happened at all.
No.
If anything, the bias has gotten worse.
It's worse.
And, you know, that's that may, from a business point of view, that's good for us, but it's bad for journalism, and I think it's unfortunate for the country, and it does mean that the Republican Party is at a disadvantage in every election.
That's right.
Now, if the left-wing press was interested in being successful, meaning having audience, they would approach things like Fox, make sure both sides of the equation get reported. That doesn't happen. And that's why you're seeing the left-wing press erode away to practically nothing, no audience, nobody trusts them. Because the left-wing press has taken to being PR flacks for big government. And the people don't trust them anymore. Congressman Louie Gohmert, up next on the Salcedo Show.
You're listening to the Chris Salcedo Show.
Part of Generation Blaze. On the Blaze Radio Network. Chris Salcedo Show. Conservative talk radio with spice.
Hop on Twitter at Chris Salcedo TX, at ChrisSalcedoTX, as in Texas. Make the connection there with the program. You know, I've been after an answer to this question for the last few weeks about this whole DHS funding mess. And I had the opportunity earlier this week to speak with Congressman Louie Gohmert. He represents the 1st District of Texas, which encompasses about 12 counties stretching nearly 120 miles down my home state's eastern border. Congressman Gohmert has been on the job since 2005. And before that, he was elected, get this, 3 terms as a district judge in Smith County and appointed by Texas Governor Rick Perry at the time to complete a term as Chief Justice of the 12th Court of Appeals. Here is how my interview went with Congressman Louie Gohmert.
Great to talk to you, Chris.
As you heard, sir, I have been trying to get a lawmaker to answer the following question for weeks now. We put in requests to Crew's office, Cornyn's office, and they just can't seem to make it happen. So here's the question. I'm hoping with your law background, you can help us out. The big battle going on right now over Department of Homeland Security funding and the fact that the House has fully funded DHS but has removed funding for Mr. Obama's executive memo, his executive inaction memo. And the question is this: under what obligation, either under the Constitution or by law, does the Congress have to fund an executive order memo which does not take the official form of an executive order?
If there's nothing that requires us to fund it. There's nothing that says we should fund it. And in fact, I'm so glad you know. I mean, I heard one of the so-called experts on Fox News this week say that the president signed 2 executive orders regarding this program, and you obviously know there was no executive order. He didn't sign an executive order. As any good monarch would, he spoke it into existence. So as he says it, was it written, but it wasn't written by him. It was a memo written by Secretary Jay Johnson. And there's nothing in the Constitution that says we've got to fund a memo that overrode existing law duly passed by Congress in the Real ID Act, in the Immigration Act back in 1986 and 1990s. And the memo just overrode all of that existing law that was passed by Congress and signed by prior presidents. So there is no reason we have to fund those things. And in fact, as I hear people talk about, gee, the damage that's going to be done if we don't fund the Secretary of Homeland Security's memo. It is absurd. The damage that's currently being done to our Constitution really is irreparable. We need to stand our ground, and I'm sure you've heard, you know, yesterday, Majority Leader McConnell says, well, hey, he's going to provide a clean DHS funding bill. How can you call it clean when it's the nastiest, dirtiest of the bills you could imagine because of what it does to the U.S. Constitution?
Agreed.
I just don't see how you can call that clean.
Yeah, you know what? And it speaks to the cowardice and perhaps the realization that the Obama White House has that they are not standing on solid legal ground, because you and I both know, had Mr. Obama put pen to paper and made this an official executive order, that would have been under judicial review. That would have been subject to judicial review. And this Obama White House, not having a lot of luck with the courts and their adherence to the rule of law or the Constitution of the United States. Am I right?
No, I can't say that I know what any court's going to do, especially after the Obamacare ruling. You know, they're all over the map.
Yeah. But I mean, again, the reason why Mr. Obama was, in my view, cowardly and not making this an official executive order is that it would have been reviewed by another part of the government, by the judiciary, and he couldn't afford that.
Well, they've got review on the memo, or memos, as you pointed out. And, Judge Hainan in the Southern District pointed that out very clearly. When I heard that he had written a 123-page order, I knew exactly what he had done as a judge. If I knew something was going to immediately go up on appeal, and I didn't want to give anybody, not poor lawyers or courts, the opportunity to misinterpret anything I'd done, I laid it all out succinctly in order, so it was clear immediately on appeal what I did. You can't say, well, we deduced that perhaps he was thinking this or that. Judge Hainan spelled it completely out. And by the way, he was a classmate of mine in law school. He was one of the smartest guys around, and went to work with Andrews and Kurth there in Houston, one of the best firms in the country. And I never had a problem referring family or friends to that firm, to Andy. Now, Judge Hainan, he's a brilliant guy, and you can read that in his opinion. That's something that Judge Hainan himself wrote, you could tell.
Yeah, you know what? He completely flummoxed the Obama administration, which a hat tip to the judge, and you know, doing what in my view the GOP leadership is not doing right now. The congressman from the 1st District of the great state of Texas, our guest right now, Louis Gohmert. Let's move on to another topic. A Keystone XL pipeline was officially vetoed. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Well, it's just amazing. He talks about job creation, but somebody asked way back, if he's the one responsible for creating all the jobs, why did he create nearly all of them in Texas, a state that he is not very happy with? And the answer is, well, it's because he didn't create them. Texas has done the creating because of the job environment. It has nothing to do with his orders, his plans, his ideas. They're job killers. And that's exactly what he did with the Keystone Pipeline. He, once again, created an environment where there'll be less jobs. That's what he did with that. And not only that, I mean, of course, he'll be out of office before it will have an effect, a significant effect on the price of oil. But that's a lot of oil that would be flowing across America, not on Warren Buffett's trains, so it's cheaper to transmit, but
safer.
42,000 or so jobs created while the pipeline was being built. But these guys are all about negating our ability to be energy independent. They are doing everything they can to kill the pipeline, the Alaskan pipeline. I think it's 300,000 barrels. If it gets below that, they have to shut it down. He'll be thrilled if he could get that done before he leaves office. They're cutting down on our ability to to feed oil into that for the future, and then killing Keystone Pipeline. Heck, China's just chomping at the bit to get a pipeline running to Canada's west coast. And, you know, Canada's apparently thinking, heck, go ahead and run a pipeline to the west, and then when America wakes up and finally builds Keystone all the way across the country, then they'll be able to let both America and China bid on their oil instead of the U.S. getting all of it.
That's crazy. Congressman Louie Gohmert, my guest right now from the 1st District of Texas. So look into your crystal ball, if you will. And is the DHS fight the way it's playing out, where we see Mitch McConnell waving the white flag of surrender to Obama? Is that how this entire his entire final 2 years in office is going to look, where he violates the law, he violates the Constitution, and Republicans just go along with it?
Well, that's the way it's looking. We've got a few courageous folks down in the Senate that are saying, we're not giving in, so this isn't a done deal. Then you have other senators in the Senate saying, well, okay, we're going to strip out the defunding of the amnesty from funding of DHS, but we'll only do it if we get word from the House that they will vote for it the way we strip it out. And they haven't gotten that indication yet. There are people around here in the House that think, well, Boehner's history is get to the last minute and cave. He hasn't as of yesterday, but we'll see. That's been the history, but we'll see if he continues to do that. There was something that happened in January that seemed to help move the Speaker, some say to the right, I would say more to the middle, but from the left. But anyway, he's standing firm right now. There must have been something happened that concerned him about sitting Speaker.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. And the last question I have for you, Congressman, if he caves on this, is his speakership in trouble?
There are plenty of people that I've talked to, including yesterday, that say he just can't cave. This is too important, or we'd have to do something. We'll see.
All right. Congressman Louie Gohmert, he represents the 1st District of the great state of Texas. Sir, don't be a stranger. I haven't talked to you in about a couple of years, so let's not wait that long until the next time you and I speak, okay?
Love talking to you, Chris. Thanks so much.
All right, that's how it went. Earlier this week when I had a conversation with Louie Gohmert, on the other side of the break, I do want to get into some of this national security stuff. I've also got, in case you didn't watch all of CPAC, there were some moments that I took away that were pretty darn good that I thought I ought to pass on to you. Don't forget, we got a Constitution Revolution. And I've got to remember, somebody remind me to talk about Mary Ramirez's new piece. Of course, she is one of the fantastic authors in the contributor section of TheBlaze.com, writes under our banner here, under the Salcedo Show. So that's all coming up. Don't go anywhere. And oh, yeah, next hour, a panel on how to beat Obamacare. Back in a sec.
Conservative Talk Radio with Spice.
The Chris Salcedo Show, only
on the Blaze Radio Network. Salcedo.
You know, on this DHS funding business, there is a week extension, by the way, folks. If you went to bed last night going, oh, they're going to shut down DHS, which really 85% of the people were going to report to work anyway, just not get paid. So saying it's going to be shut down is really not true. But that, you know, don't let the facts get in the way of the press, right? Anyway, I put out a tweet last night to Senator Mitch McConnell's office, because of course he won't come on and talk with us. But I put out a tweet. I said, according to Senator Reid, quote, the Republican Congress has shown that it simply cannot govern, end quote. And I asked Mr. McConnell, glad you spared Reid that nuclear option? Look, now that we have a week extension, Mitch McConnell, grow a pair. Will you please? What was done to the United States Senate by Harry Reid already flushed all that precedence down the toilet. All that precedent that had been established about respecting the rights of minorities have been flushed down the toilet by the Democrats, by Harry Reid. What obligation do you have to maintain civility toward a man who trounced all over your party's rights? You need to go nuclear, Mr. McConnell. You need to pass this must-sign DHS funding bill and get it on the occupier of the Oval Office desk. Make him veto it. Make him veto it. Then it will be Obama who is stopping DHS funding to preserve his lawless executive inaction memo. And folks, the reason why I am so deliberate, and this is what you've got to understand, I am so deliberate at calling it what it is, because as you heard Larry Gohmert refer to Fox News, executive order, executive action. No. It may be executive action. The executive action is inaction. Mr. Obama is ordering the federal government not to enforce the law. And Obama has vowed to punish those who don't listen to. Mr. Obama is saying, look, number one, I'm going to tell you that you are not to enforce the law. And if you disobey me, I'm going to punish you if you decide you do enforce the law. He was talking with MSNBS about this. Have a listen.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to see how well we do in this election. And I think a lot of it is going to depend.
Actually, that's not it. That was Mr. Obama calling us enemies. I've got to find out that soundbite is really astonishing to me, because you have a sitting occupier of the Oval Office who is basically instructing the federal government, don't obey the law. And if I catch you obeying the law, there will be consequences.
But what are the consequences? Because, you know, how do you ensure that ICE agents or Border Patrol won't be deporting people like this? What are the consequences?
Look, the bottom line is that if somebody's working for ICE and there is a policy and they don't follow the policy, there are going to be consequences to it.
So there's Obama. You know, the folks at MSNBS are very worried that the law will be followed. we don't want the law followed because we don't like the law. So just do your executive thing. Trounce on the Constitution, and we want to make sure that nobody gets it in their head in the federal government to follow the law, says MSNBS. And Obama says, let me be clear, I'm going to punish those who follow the law.
888-900-3393.
The Chris Salcedo Show.
On the Blaze Radio Network.
Prepare yourself to ingest current events, pop culture, and politics with a side of Latin flair.
Vaches. I don't have to show you any stinking vaches.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
All right, glad you made it, everybody. Second hour of the Salcedo Show here on the Blaze Radio Network. Telephone number you want to reach out and say howdy, 888-900-3393. That's 888-900-3393, the Broad Voice studio line. Keeping in touch with me on social media, we make it very easy here. You can go to Facebook, The Chris Salcedo Show. Just put that in the search bar and you're going to find it. You can go to Twitter, and it's easy to find the handle there if you know how to spell the name, at Chris Salcedo TX, at ChrisSalcedoTX, as in Texas. Great ways to listen to the program live. If you have, if you make us part of your Saturday ritual, which I'm incredibly honored that you do, you can go to blaze.com/radio, SiriusXM, channel 778, two radio apps on the smartphone, Blaze Radio smartphone app and the iHeart Radio smartphone app. Also, you can head to SoundCloud, iTunes, and Stitcher. If you can't make us part of your Saturday ritual, then basically put us on your Sunday ritual or maybe your Monday ritual. Or whenever is convenient for you, go to SoundCloud, iTunes, and Stitcher, and you can get the program on demand. On demand listening for you of not only the Salcedo Show, but all the programming we do here on the Blaze Radio Network. I got to say about iTunes, it's just darn convenient the way they set that up, because you can basically follow the show, have it downloaded to your device. And it'll be there waiting for you whenever you get around to it. And we appreciate you being there and helping us grow the program. I am your liberty-loving Latino, Chris Salcedo. Not to be confused with those loudmouth leftist Latinos. No, 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 no. There are more of we conservatives out there than you have been led to believe. And that's part of the reason why this program exists. Another reason why it exists is to give you, is to give the folks a voice, to give you folks a voice. Something that heretofore the mainstream press has been in charge of doing is what the founders of this country envisioned the mainstream press doing. However, they have sold out. And they are now doing the government's bidding. They are looking to expand government's authority over you instead of you having a voice to that government and telling them, no, 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 you know what? I don't want my internet regulated. No, thanks. I don't want my ammunition that's perfectly legal to be restricted. And no, I don't want my government telling me that I must buy government-approved health insurance. Obamacare, folks, was just the first salvo. Now that Obama has 2 years left and he has a Republican Congress, he is, you know, he thought that he was going to have a lot of help in the United States Congress. And apparently he does, because Harry Reid is continuing to run the United States Senate. Yes, I said it. Harry Reid runs the United States Senate because Mitch McConnell doesn't have the wherewithal to want to win. He doesn't have the ability to win. John Boehner, I don't know where his head is. Some people have suggested to me where his head is. It remains to be seen. But at any rate, it looks like the leftists are winning. And by hook or by crook, they are going to impose their will upon us, whether we like it or not. But we are not helpless. So, guys, give me the nod in there. Do we have our panel assembled? Or do we have one or two of them ready to go? Just asking. Is that a yes or no? Yes? Okay. Yeah. Scotty, are we, do we have our guests all? Still working on that? How many do we have there? None of them? Okay. All right. Well, let's start off and we'll wait for the other guys to come along. Well, we'll start this discussion. Dr. James Pinckney II is a board-certified family medicine physician. Dr. James studied general surgery at the prestigious Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in L.A. After graduating from Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, he's the founder and CEO of Diamond Physicians. That's a concierge medical practice focused on the patient-physician relationship. Diamond bypasses those cumbersome and inefficient middlemen. We call them the traitorous insurance companies, to deliver personalized, high-quality medical care to their valued clients. Dr. James, welcome back to the Salcedo Show here on The Blaze.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on the show.
I am glad to have you here as part of the panel. We're going to be reaching out, and we're just having some issues trying to make connections with another doctor, Dr. John Mooney, and a guy named Michael Tétreau. I think it's a French name. That's why I'm having such a hard time pronouncing it. Tétreau, I believe, is how it's pronounced. And he is a guy who writes about this stuff extensively, has a website. We'll get into all that here in due course. You and I, during the week, were able to have a conversation about Obamacare, about how much more insidious this law is than we were first led to believe. It was bad enough that our federal government was telling us that we must buy something. That was in and of itself a slap in the face of freedom and liberty. But now it is coming to light that folks like you, who are coming up with alternatives to the traitorous insurance companies and to Obamacare, you folks have been targeted, it seems, inside the legislation. Let's go over the first point here. Your concierge medicine model does not satisfy Obamacare requirements, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So, and the reason why this was done is because the traitorous insurance companies and Team Obama knew that as soon as they tried to impose this on the American people, those who didn't want to comply, which is, if you look at the polling, the majority of Americans don't want to comply, that they would be looking for alternatives. And the government wanted to make sure that that the people had no other choice but to surrender to a government-approved healthcare plan with government chosen providers, the five major providers, the traitorous insurance companies out there. So it's written law. They're trying to edge people like you out, entrepreneurs like you out, correct?
You know, that is unfortunate, Chris. You know, I've had several clients over the last couple of weeks with the tax returns coming into light that are going to be fined 1% of their gross income. And they can't afford insurance. I have one client, she needs a meniscal surgery. She has a meniscal tear, so she needs an arthroscopic surgery. And she can't afford her insurance. It's almost $600 a month for her. She pays $195 to be a Diamond client. She gets unlimited visits, no copay, 24-hour access to her doctor. And I found her a surgery for $3,700 instead of $40,000. But now she can't take the hit from the tax return either, because she doesn't have the Affordable Care Act exchange plans. So she has to choose between Diamond and between terrible insurance policies. And she came to my office crying yesterday.
Yeah.
Because she said, you know, Dr. J, I can't afford both. I have to make a decision. I said, I understand. I completely understand. You have to make the best decision for your family. We're here. So I'm going to hold her membership if she can't afford it, when she can make some more money and come back to our practice. But it's sad. And this is happening all over the country. People are forced to choose between direct primary care, which is a wonderful alternative, and a terrible insurance policy.
All right. Now, folks, we are joined by our other two guests now. Dr. John Mooney, he is the founder of AMG Medical Group. He is a respected surgeon who founded AMG on the basis of providing high-quality health care at an affordable cost without government or the insurance companies, the traitorous insurance companies, getting their grubby little hands all over it. Dr. Mooney, I want to welcome you. And Michael Tétrault is also here. He's considered an expert in the field of concierge medicine and direct primary care. He currently serves as the editor-in-chief of the DPC Journal and Concierge Medicine Today. Michael is the author of these books, Branding Concierge Medicine, The Marketing MD, The Doctor's Guide to Concierge Medicine. He's a faculty member, too, and a physician mentor at the Doctorpreneur Institute. I love that name, in Atlanta, Georgia. Gentlemen, welcome to you guys to the panel. As I'm going to welcome you, I'm going to go to break. And Dr. Mooney, we're going to come back and talk with you. The first question will go to you, because okay. Dr. James, who we were just talking with, he has concierge medicine. What you do is something called, I'm getting my terminology straight here, direct primary care. And I want to flesh out the differences here. Again, our job here, gentlemen, today is to come up with alternatives, viable alternatives to beat Obamacare. Stick with me. More on the other side of the break. It is the Salcedo Show here on the Blaze Radio Network.
The media wasn't ready for a conservative Latino, so naturally, we gave him a show. The Chris Salcedo Show
on the Blaze Radio Network. Chris Salcedo is on the Blaze Radio Network.
The entire hour of this program, the entire 1 o'clock Eastern hour dedicated to beating Obamacare, my guest, Dr. James Pickney of Diamond Physicians, Dr. John Mooney of AMG Medical Group, and Michael Tétrault, I'm going to get that right before the end of this interview, I promise, editor-in-chief of DPC Journal and Concierge Medicine Today are my guests. Dr. John Mooney has promised your question comes up next here. I was just talking with Dr. James Pickney about how insidious Obamacare is, and how it is basically trying to make sure that folks like you who are trying to come up with a better way to do medicine aren't able to do it. Would you describe, first off, the difference between concierge medicine and what it is that you do?
Well, we practice direct primary care in a pure sense. We offer our members a low flat monthly fee, for example, for $89 a month. Mm-hmm. We don't participate in any insurance company, so that's $89 all they pay to us, and there is no copay associated with or deductible. So our services are wide range and includes unlimited visits, blood work, X-ray, sonogram, mammogram, Pap smear, minor surgeries, physical therapy, and more.
Gotcha. Okay. And you are located in New York, and Diamond Physicians is located in Texas. So we got a left-wing state and a conservative state represented, and you guys are trying to make it go, provide alternatives to the American people But Michael, it's very hard to do because a closer examination of Obamacare shows that these concierge slash direct primary care physicians have a lot stacked against them because, frankly, Obamacare saw these guys coming, these entrepreneurs coming, and wanted to cut them off at the knees so Americans would have no choice but to go to the government for their government-approved health care plans. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And, I mean, these are pretty deep waters. You know, having Obamacare and having just plain health insurance is now the law of the land. And one of the very first questions that consumers want to know when they, you know, are given the option of walking into a concierge doctor's office or a direct primary care office is, how does this work with my insurance? Does this cost me more? You know, those are the types of questions that doctors are being asked all over the country. And these are the definite, there are free market models and that are arising. I mean, look at the trends in retail medicine and, you know, the urgent care centers are popping up everywhere. We're here in Atlanta, and there's an urgent care center and a CVS Minute Clinic and your Take Care clinics on just about every corner now.
Yeah, and one of the other insidious problems with it, if let's say I despise Obamacare for on so many levels, it's not even funny. If I wanted to partake in an alternative, and say I wanted to do concierge medicine or direct primary care, Dr. James, and I wanted to partake in your service, that doesn't qualify under Obamacare. But if I wanted to buy a catastrophic loss policy that was under Obamacare that did qualify, they used to be relatively inexpensive. And for folks, if you don't know what a catastrophic loss policy is, basically, if you get in the car accident or the devastating cancer diagnosis, that's when that insurance kicks in. And it used to be relatively inexpensive, like $80 or $90 a month. But Dr. James, the insurance companies made sure that was not going to be a viable alternative either, didn't they?
Yeah, unfortunately now these catastrophic policies are hovering around $300 a month at the least, and that's for around a $6,000 deductible. So it's very unfortunate because we used to be able to couple that catastrophic piece for around $100 a month and Diamond Services, which average around $145 a month, and you'd have a wonderful comprehensive plan for you and your family for, you know, $300 a month, under $300 a month. So it's a huge issue, huge problem, and we're struggling to try and find a way for clients to be covered under the Affordable Care Act and continue their Diamond Services.
And after all is said and done, though, Dr. Mooney, there are still, if you look at the silver plans in Obamacare and the gold plans, if you still buy one of these unfairly highly priced catastrophic loss policies, you could probably still exceed the silver and gold plans by buying a service like AMG plus one of these ratcheted up catastrophic loss policies and still come out ahead of Obamacare. Isn't that right?
Oh, that's definitely. I mean, the bronze level coverage, for example, has a combination of deductible and out-of-pocket expenses almost reaching $7,000 a year. So if anybody in New York area wants, they want to see the doctor, then they have to really pay that $7,000 before they can their insurance can kick in. So if they buy $89 a plan with us, more or less 90% of their problem could be taken care of with $89 a month, which comes to slightly over $1,000 a year.
Yeah, I got
you. So this is definitely a much better alternative and a much better care as well.
Sure. And Michael, you know, another one of these issues is that, you know, we saw the language of the Obama administration as they were passing Obamacare. They made guys like Dr. James Pinckney and Dr. Mooney the enemy. They made them the enemy, saying, oh, they're charging too much. We are hearing horror stories from medical professionals all over the country who, under the Obamacare provisions, are actually having to pay out of their pockets to see patients. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's not my idea of a successful business model. If you have to pay to see patients, am I right?
That's right. And I mean, the administrative burden and the overhead that's incurred on traditional managed care insurance related type of practices outside of the free market medicine type of models that are emerging are, you know, I've had doctors tell me they're becoming better typists than they are doctors. And when they move into concierge care, or it's a cousin direct primary care, it's so rewarding. And they say, you know what, this was the hardest thing I've ever done from a business perspective, because I'm trained to be a doctor, I'm trained to treat the body, but I'm not trained to be in business. And so, you know, they say, I get to practice my practice and treat my patients in the way that I've always dreamed of and wanted to. And I'm so happy to be able to do that.
All right. We're going to go to break here in the next couple of minutes. And I want you guys to focus on a couple of questions for me. Well, the primary question I'm going to ask all three of you when we come back, which is how we actually started out this segment. Your prescription, if I can keep it in the medical parlance, your prescription for beating Obamacare. There are hundreds of thousands. Well, let's just say millions of people out there who have lost their insurance policies, who are looking for alternatives to Obamacare, because by any measure, it still remains highly unpopular with American people, and it is failing left and right. I mean, one of the most biggest examples is the wrong information that was given out to nearly a million individuals here in the United States about their tax filing purposes with the IRS because of Obamacare and this website of theirs. So here's the question. When we come back from break, I want Dr. James Pinkney from Diamond Physicians, Dr. John Mooney from AMG Medical Group, and Michael Tetreault he actually is the editor-in-chief for DPC Journal and Concierge Medicine Today. I want you all thinking about this. Thoughtful alternatives that we can give the Blaze audience to Obamacare. How do we beat Obamacare and allow them to keep high-quality medical care in their lives but not breaking the bank? All right? So make sure we'll get your phone calls in, too, here, 888-900-3393, 888-900-3393. Also coming up on the program this hour, the Constitution Revolution with Chad Kent. He has got a beauty. It's part of our ongoing commitment to remembering where it is we come from, where we get our rights, where we get our responsibilities, where we get our protections from the Constitution of the United States. This hour dedicated to beating Obamacare, a three-guest panel. And I invite you to either jump on Twitter at Chris Salcedo TX, jump on Facebook, The Chris Salcedo Show, or dial us up, 888-900-3393, and we'll get your comments, especially if you have questions for our panel of experts. Again, we've got Dr. James Pinkney, Dr. John Mooney, and Michael Tetreault is on the line. So make sure you call us up and get those questions in, and I will ask these gentlemen, but when we come back, their solutions to help you beat Obamacare. It's all on the way. The Salcedo Show here on the Blaze Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
The Chris Salcedo Show, part of Generation Blaze, only on the Blaze Radio Network.
Listening to the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
We will keep this promise to the American people. If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period. If you like your health care plan, you will be able to keep your health care plan, period. A system where we're going to work with your employers to lower your premiums by up to $2,500 per family per year.
None of that happened. A bunch of lies that were used to sell the American people on the Obamacare legislation. Not one Republican voting for said legislation. It all belongs to the Democrats. Let me add another lie, just while we're thinking about lies here from the Obama administration. The Lois Lerner's emails are completely gone, not recoverable, as they discover thousands more Lois Lerner emails that they said weren't there. Okay, let's get back to our guests right now. Dr. James Pinkney from Diamond Physicians, Dr. John Mooney from AMG Medical Group, and Michael Tetreault. He is with, he's the editor-in-chief with DPC Journal and Concierge Medicine Today. Gentlemen, I gave you the question before the break so you can think on it nice and hard, and Dr. James, we'll start with you. How do the American people beat Obamacare?
You know, Chris, we had a grandiose idea about 5 years ago, and we wanted to blanket the entire country with affordable care. So what we decided to do was a franchise model. And we're actually the first concierge practice in the country to choose the franchise model. And it's actually a combination of concierge and direct primary care. So our practice is a little bit more expensive than Dr. Mooney's AMG group. We average about $1,800 a year all-in costs for our clients, well under the bronze plan, $7,000 a year. And we've got three revenue drivers. So we've got our monthly membership plans, our Diamond Solutions plan, which target corporations and lower healthcare costs for large and small businesses. And then we've got an executive physical program that is state-of-the-art. So we're trying to help investors, physicians all over the country deliver our Diamond model to the people that truly deserve affordable care, exemplary care, and just destroy that traditional insurance model where patients only receive 8 minutes of face time with their doctor. Our clients average 60 minutes with their doctor, and again, one low monthly price, unlimited visits, no copay, 24/7 access, all your acute medications and all your acute procedures are included.
Okay. Dr. John Mooney, same question to you, sir. What is your prescription for defeating Obamacare?
Well, my prescription is very simple. You join us at $89 a month, and you get all your primary care services plus more. And you buy a high deductible health savings account or bronze level coverage to be compliant with Obamacare, because you know, just my plan itself, it won't, you know, it will not, you know, prevent you from being penalized. So that's the solution. But unfortunately, even the bronze level or high deductible HSA accounts are very expensive. And if you want anybody to accept what you're offering, you really have to make, you gotta make it affordable. And as you all remember, when the cell phones came out first time, it was $3,000 in 1987. And the network usage was very expensive. Now the cell phones are practically cheap, affordable. So billions of people on earth have the cell phone. I think we gotta find out a way to reduce the cost of healthcare so people can participate, not necessarily run away from it.
Yeah, I got you. Michael Tetreault, this is something that you have been writing. How long have you been doing what you've been doing with DPC Journal and Concierge Medicine Today?
Since about 2005, maybe 2007. I'm not exactly sure, but we've been writing about this and talking with a lot of doctors and consumers as well as businesses and right. even investment groups.
What have you found out was the best way? Because we can already all, I think everybody here talking can concede that Obamacare is not the way to fix health care. How do we do that, and how do we defeat Obamacare by, again, allowing the American people to bypass it, bypass the traitorous insurance companies altogether?
Well, my answer is a little bit more complicated, and it takes a little bit longer. But I think that good families and good individuals and smart individuals are readers, and they need to become as informed and educated about what their options are in their local businesses and their local communities, and find out, you know, is there even concierge doctors around me? Are there direct primary care clinics around me? And if there are, we've listed them out. There are 41 questions you should start asking these clinics if you think that one of these is for you. You know, I think leaders are readers, and you've got to become informed. And it's all based on what you can afford too. So if a direct primary care clinic is, if you're in your 30s or 40s, a direct primary care clinic, is very popular among the Generation X as well as the millennial generation, between about $25 and about $85. Direct primary care clinics across the board, across the country, are usually under $100, and they require a monthly membership, and they don't participate in insurance. Whereas on the concierge side, if you really want to develop, you know, a much closer relationship, have much more comprehensive services involved, you know, a lot of people think concierge medicine is very unaffordable, but in reality, it usually typically costs the majority of the plans or the majority of the practice memberships out there are between $100 and about $225 a month. So you need to become informed about what your options are. And if you're wondering, you know, I just take whatever my business gives me and I don't ask any questions. I think that you patients and consumers and employees should start talking to their HR departments. And there's a lot of resources out there. And we provide the DPC Consumer Guide and the Patient's Guide to Concierge Medicine that people can give their employers to, you know, soften the beaches in their HR departments and say, hey, have you guys thought about this? Maybe for next year. You know, let's give us Let's yeah. think about some options here. And but it's all based on what you can afford. And you know, and I think that it you've got to become well educated about what's out there.
Let's do a quick fire here. Basically, it's either very short answers or yes or no answers. Let's just get it on the table right now. Dr. James Pinckney II, Obamacare, good or bad?
Bad.
Bad. Dr. Mooney?
Well, it was well-intended, but unfortunately, implementation and the outcome is very bad.
And Michael?
I completely agree with Dr. Mooney.
Yeah, it is. Okay, yeah, okay. Nice idea, but as with all government-centered issues, it tends to lack in implementation. The free market, at least this is my two cents here, gentlemen, the free market is definitely the best arbiter to solve these kinds of things. If you're looking at excellence and looking at quality care and affordable care for everybody. As far as, there was one more question I had for you all. Dr. James Pinckney, by the way, the second is one of my guests, Diamond Physicians, Dr. John Mooney, AMG Medical Group, and Michael Tetreau. He is with the editor-in-chief, the DPC Journal, and Concierge Medicine Today, and author of so many books, it's not even funny, about concierge medicine and direct primary care. Gentlemen, there is going to be a lot of resistance out there from the federal government, and there's going to be a lot of folks who are seeking alternatives. If you had your druthers and the way medicine would look in the future, is it going to be this government-centered approach, or will it be a free market approach? Dr. James.
Well, we're hoping that it's going to be a free market. I think the Affordable Care Act did have good intentions, but it focused on access to health insurance instead of access to health care, which is much more important. So what I'd like to see is the government accept direct primary care, concierge medicine as an alternative to the Affordable Care Act. Don't make people buy policies that are subpar, and let the free market take over and let competition drive down prices and cut healthcare costs exponentially.
Dr. John Mooney, are the insurance companies friend or foe?
Well, they're not. I don't think they're friend because they also are in this together with the government and all the regulators because. I mean, but the ACA allows them to keep 20% of the premium. So the higher the premium, the more they keep. So I think they're in the basket with them. I don't think they are the trends.
Michael, what's your read on, again, the big providers, and given the fact that they've already pledged that they will fight any Republican effort to get rid of Obamacare because their bottom line is looking really pretty. They're making billions upon billions of dollars off of forcing Americans to buy more expensive versions of their product. Are they friends or foe to the American people?
I think that I agree with both of the statements here, and I think that they're probably more foe. They're trying to get their dollars out of their clients, out of us, their constituents. But I think that there are efforts being made with the Direct Primary Care Coalition and lobbying efforts. They're small efforts, and they're statewide efforts, typically, that are moving these free market models ahead. I also think we really need to support these, consumer supply versus demand. If you have a lot of demand for free market services like concierge care, retail medicine, direct primary care, then insurance companies are going to start beta testing products. They're going to start creating wraparound products. And we've seen some of that across the board in certain markets. But I think we also need to look at, who has lobbying dollars that can actually work for us in the, free market medicine area. And I see that, we have our Take Care clinics, our CVSs, our even Walmart and Whole Foods are thinking about diving into the retail clinic market. And those are free market forces that are, helping us choose that, okay, I didn't know that I could get a flu shot for, $12. I didn't know that I could get an X-ray for $33. And so those companies, those big pharmacy chains have a lot of lobbying dollars that they're spending. We did a story on that just this past couple of weeks, and they're spending, I think, over $4 million a year just in 2014. And now, granted, a lot of that has to do with pharmaceutical, state lines, and can I send this pharmaceutical, drug across, from Michigan to, Texas, et cetera. But they're putting dollars in Washington, and we need to watch where they're putting their dollars too, because these free market forces can help us. And so that's a very dirty, a very feet on the ground type of approach.
I got it. Okay, gentlemen, I want to thank you for dedicating some time here on a Saturday. This is a very important topic. And you know what? You guys know the business that you're in, so this will not be the last time that we undertake something like this on the Salcedo Show. Dr. James Pinckney II, the operator of Diamond Physicians, Dr. John Mooney, the founder of AMG Medical Group, and Michael Tetreault, he's the editor-in-chief of DPC Journal and Concierge Medicine Today. Gentlemen, thank you so much for carving out time for the Chris Salcedo Show.
Thank you.
All right, guys. More to come on the other side of the break. The Constitution Revolution with Mr. Chad Kent on the way. Don't go anywhere.
The Chris Salcedo Show will be right back.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Taking in a little Latin flair with Chris Salcedo on the Blaze Radio Network.
If you do me a favor, actually do yourself a favor, check out the Facebook page, The Chris Salcedo Show. The Chris Salcedo Show, even easy to find if you know how to spell the name, C-H-R-I-S-S-A-L-C-E-D-O. You got to scroll down seven postings and you're going to see a couple of comics. One's going to make you laugh, one will make you cry is probably not the right reaction. One will be very solemn. One will be very eye-opening. The first one is President Obama is being depicted by Michael Ramirez, the gifted satirist and comic producer. It's Keystone XL pipeline going in and out of Obama's ears. Jobs says one side, Keystone says the other. It's a dense material, say these drillers. We can't drill through it. It's Obama's head. So make sure you check that out. Also, the radical Islamic fundamentalist jihad movement, the Nazis of our time. That is the second comic, very powerful one that I wish you would share. Yes, the radical Islamic fundamentalist movement are the Nazis of our time. All right, now it is time for the Constitution Revolution. Our buddy Chad Kent, he is the author of the book Uncomplicating the Constitution. He's here with a look at the founding document as it was meant to be known and understood. It's supposed to be simple. From we the people. Here's Chad.
Last week, we talked about the importance of the separation of powers. But there's another aspect of our government that acts as a partner with the separation of powers to make sure that we're effective in limiting our government. And that partner is the system of checks and balances. Basically, the system of checks and balances means that each branch of government has a set of tools that it can use to rein in the other two branches if they start to get out of control. With checks and balances, we're going back again to this fact that people love power. And when they get a little bit of power, they usually want more. So we know that our politicians are inevitably going to try to increase their own power. And when they do that, because of the way that the powers are separated in our government, at some point, they're going to infringe on the power of the politicians in one of the other two branches. That means that they're going to run into the only opposing force that is just as strong as their own love of power, which is another politician's love of power. We can expect the politicians in the branch that's being infringed on to stand up and use that system of checks and balances to protect their own power. And that's what we want. What we're trying to do here is pit our politicians' love of power up against itself. We want to get them into this tug of war where they fight with each other to see who's going to have the power. That way, when one politician pulls on that rope and tries to increase his own power, another politician will pull equally as hard on the other side of the rope to defend his power. And neither of them will end up with any more power. That's the Constitution Revolution, and I am Chad Kent for the Chris Salcedo Show.
Very interesting. The checks and balances system, which has been thrown under the bus by one Barack Obama. He doesn't like limits on his own power. He doesn't like the Constitution of the United States. That is why Mr. Obama has chosen to ignore the rule of law and ignore the Constitution. Up next, we're dealing with CPAC and national security. All coming up, and some Obamacare, too, on the Salcedo Show.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show.
Part of the next generation of talk radio.
This is the Blaze Radio Network.
Prepare yourself to ingest current events, pop culture, and politics with a side of Latin flair.
Vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
Hour three. Man, this show has flown by. I can't remember from week to week what I talked to you about the week before, because you know I'm on the air in Houston. I do a Monday through Friday show too. The morning's out there on AM 700 KSEV. So sometimes I forget what I've talked to you about. Your host works 6 days a week. I don't know if a lot of you folks realize that, but I do. So I'm trying to make sure that I, you know, make sure you're informed and don't skip anything. And there's so much stuff that happened this week. Telephone number if you want to reach out and say howdy is 888-900-3393 on the Broad Voice studio line, 888-900-3393. On Twitter at Chris Salcedo TX, CHRISSALCEDO. On Facebook, The Chris Salcedo Show, Blaze.com/radio, SiriusXM channel 778, and two smartphone apps, one the Blaze Radio app and then iHeartRadio app, are great ways to listen to the program live. Sharing what you hear, this is so crucial, so important. Share. Not only get the satisfaction of listening to The Salcedo Show all by your lonesome, make sure you share the joy. And it is joy. Pure, unadulterated joy listening to this program. SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, it will make it easy for you to do so. As I said, a lot happened this week, and it was, I have to admit, about during the week, it was one of those times where you get really depressed, when liberals are smiling from ear to ear, and we conservatives get depressed. And this is all under the banner of, does Barack Obama love America? Which is what Rudy Giuliani asked us all to contemplate. The reason why the left-wing press was pushing back so hard, and there was actually polling out this week that backed this up, a third of the country, 33% of our nation believes, no, he doesn't. Right off the bat, the others probably just didn't want to admit it. I mean, the fact that it's resonating, that question is resonating with so many people. And how can you blame them? As I mentioned earlier in the program, the Federal Communications Commission taking over, the government takeover of the internet, all under the guise that they're going to punish the big internet providers, when really all it was to get control of the internet so they could control content. That's going to be the net effect. They get to control content. They get to do this in the interest of fairness. Oh, you thought it was just internet speed? No. It's content. Then, instead of banning a AR-15 pistol, which utilizes ammunition for the AR-15 rifle, they decided they would go ahead and ban the ammunition so as to get more people, to disarm more people, by saying, well, the AR-15 is armor-piercing and is not allowed in the pistol, but it still feeds the AR-15 rifle. So instead of banning the pistol, they ban the ammunition, so nobody that uses the AR-15 ammunition, pistol or rifle, can use it. You see, that's what leftists do, against the will of the people. We also found out that the Osama bin Laden raid in intelligence that has been in Mr. Obama's custody for 4 years now and has not been gone over, it's starting to leak out some of the reasons why. Some of the intelligence that Obama didn't want you to know, because then it would precipitate us having to act. Again, this is what Mr. Obama does. He tries to keep us in the dark so he doesn't have to lift a finger to fight our enemies. Iran had ties with Al-Qaeda, with Osama bin Laden. Part of the documents revealed inside of that intelligence trove that we recovered on the OBL raid. No wonder Obama didn't want that getting out. It might scuttle Mr. Obama's attempt to make sure that Iran gets a nuclear weapon. And that wouldn't be good now, would it? So we had also this week rather extraordinary testimony on Capitol Hill by two members of the Obama administration. Here is John Kerry. Here is John Kerry trying to tell you and me everything's hunky-dory. Americans have never been safer.
Despite ISIL, despite the visible killings that you see and how horrific they are, we are actually living in a period of less daily threat to Americans and to people in the world than normally, less deaths, less violent deaths today.
Now, collectively, America said, What did he just say? We are safer than we have ever been? I don't think so. Common sense and really just opening up a newspaper and reading it tells you that the contrary is true. Fox News Channel read a statement by former Obama general Michael Flynn. He gave his reaction to John Kerry's rather extraordinary statement.
The former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, ripped Kerry's flowery assessment by declaring to Fox, quote, Secretary Kerry is out of touch with reality. He clearly is not listening to the entire U.S. intelligence community. He is not reading any of the intelligence or other things that have been written over the last few weeks, months, years.
And then the day after John Kerry made that rather astonishing and untrue statement, here comes the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, saying something altogether different.
When the final accounting is done, 2014 will have been the most lethal year for global terrorism in the 45 years such data has been compiled. In my 50-plus years in the intelligence business, I don't know of a time that has been more beset by challenges and crises around the world. I worry a lot about the safety and security of this country.
Who do you believe? Now, the liberals will say, I believe John Kerry. Because John Kerry is telling me what I want to hear. And I guess, conversely, the other argument could be made, too, that James Clapper, conservatives would support what he is saying because, you know, he is telling us what we want to hear. But then there's this whole opening your eyes business and looking about what's happening in the world to where the BS meter goes off with honest people, goes off to a lesser degree Director Clapper than it does John Kerry. We know John Kerry's history of being anti-American, throwing his medals and bashing his own country, bashing the military of the United States. We know about that. Director Clapper, of course, has had his own missteps. But I'm just saying, if you put the two up against one another, who do you believe? I tend to side with Clapper. We are not safer than we have ever been. And the liberals will say, well, you're just fear-mongering. Yeah, is it fear-mongering if it's true? Is it fear-mongering if it's true? And then what is Mr. Obama's motivation for he and Kerry telling us that everything is all right when clearly it's not? Is it to keep America disarmed so that his friends in Iran can develop their nuclear weapons so the global jihad can get into full gear without American interference? Are those the actions of someone who loves America? This video went viral. Black middle school teenager having basically posting something on the internet. I'm not going to play it in its entirety, but I will play this snippet for you. Remember, we started off the conversation talking about Rudy Giuliani's question, does Obama love America?
Hi, my name's CJ Pearson, and today I wanted just to applaud Mayor Rudy Giuliani for his comments about President Barack Obama. Here's the truth of the matter. I don't want to be politically correct. I don't care about being politically correct at this point. President Obama, you don't love America. If you really did love America, you would call ISIS what it really is. An assault on Christianity, an assault on America, and a downright hate for the American values that our country holds. Of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and every single thing that our country stands for.
Again, individual who happens to be black, a young man who seems to have a lot in the ball, a lot more than John Kerry, apparently. But let's get to this business of does Barack Obama love America? You know, the more I think about it, the more I think that perhaps Rudy Giuliani and this young man is just way out of line. Anybody who would suggest that a sitting president doesn't love his country, is unpatriotic, maybe we could agree that that individual is a piece of trash and not worth listening to, right?
The problem is that
the way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt from $5 trillion for the first 42 presidents. Number 43 added $4 trillion by his lonesome, so that we now have over $9 trillion of debt that we are going to have to pay back. $30,000 for every man, woman, and child. That's irresponsible. It's unpatriotic.
So, Barack Obama, because he's a liberal, he gets to call a Republican unpatriotic. And that's okay. That's okay. When Rudy Giuliani questions Barack Obama's patriotism, asks if he loves America, oh, well, then the sky is falling. And let's examine Barack Obama's metric there. Of course, you know, he's right. President Bush running up $4.5-5 trillion in debt, added it onto our children's and our grandchildren's necks in the future to pay back. And if that action alone made Mr. Bush unpatriotic and irresponsible, Barack Obama himself has overseen the addition of over $8 trillion. So $5 trillion compared to $8 trillion. Wouldn't that make Mr. Obama, and by the way, Mr. Obama's on pace to double Bush's contribution to our national debt. Wouldn't that make Barack Obama, by his own standard, doubly unpatriotic? Just saying. Some sound from CPAC on the way on the other side of the break on the Salcedo Show. Don't go anywhere.
Dial in, let it out. 888-900-3393. This is the Chris Salcedo Show, part of Generation Blaze on the Blaze Radio Network.
The Chris Salcedo Show. Listen, dial, speak. 888-900-3393.
All right, happy you've made it back, everybody. Liberal Fred is on the Facebook page with me right now, corresponding back and forth, and he brings up a point that, as we get into the CPAC speeches, he brings up a point saying, hey, we've gone 77 days without an American death, an American military death. And, of course, he looks at that as a victory. And on its face, I do too. I am glad to know that our American military men and women are not dying. That's good. But when you examine beneath the surface as to why they're not dying, they're not dying because we've surrendered. They're not dying because we have decided to remove ourselves from the conflict. The conflict hasn't been won. The conflict is ongoing, and as a matter of fact, our enemies and adversaries are building in strength, and Team Obama has us on a course to where we will allow that to happen. Every lesson of history tells us that when this course is undertaken, eventually our enemies and our adversaries grow too strong and too big for us to ignore anymore. Then it's decision-making time. Either we surrender. That will also ensure, you know, Fred's vision of no more American deaths. Yes, you can assure that. You can surrender. You can convert to Islam and save your life. We saw this phenomenon to those who believed we shouldn't fight the Nazis, to those who believed we shouldn't fight the communists. Remember the old phrase, better red than dead. They didn't want us. A lot, you know, liberals have been with us an awful long time, folks. Despite the fact that a lot of liberals have a lot in common with communists. And it appears today liberals have a lot in common with jihadis, too. The anti-American thing. But at any rate, the ultimatum will come because it always does. And then our children and our grandchildren will be forced to combat a much stronger enemy, because the Obamas of today decided, nah, it's not worth fighting for. America's not worth fighting for. Our future's not worth fighting for. Because people die. Well, in the past, Americans have not been unwilling to pay that price. Maybe we have lost our guts. Maybe the liberals have convinced America that our ideals and our Constitution and our way of life isn't worth fighting for anymore. I'm not there. I'm not there. Sarah Palin at CPAC dedicating her speech to the fighting men and women of this country. As a matter of fact, she said a couple of things I think liberal Fred, being a gold star dad that he is, might appreciate. Here's Sarah.
I ask as one of so many mothers of a combat vet, when my son went off to war the first time as a teenager, I was confronted with the same reality that all the other moms have to face, and that's realizing that, man, I wasn't going to be there to help, to protect. Moms can't be there when they hurt. I could pray, and I did, and I do, but few things are more difficult than to kiss a child goodbye off into harm's way, knowing that you're not going to be able there to protect those first deployments. That is when a parent goes from calling him son to calling him sir. America hands over her sons and her daughters in service with the promise that they're going to be taken care of. Our troops are promised that no one will be left behind on the battlefield. They're promised that a grateful nation will spare no expense to patch them up and bring them back to health when wounded. And now they come home wounded, too many broken in body and spirit. Well, we, their mothers and their fathers and their husbands and their wives, we're here to collect on the promises made. We can't wait for D.C. to fix their bureaucratic blunders. This bureaucracy is killing our vets.
Hmm. She's, of course, alluding to the Veterans Administration, whose head was just caught. The head of the VA was just caught in a lie, saying he was part of special forces when he really wasn't. And this is the man we entrusted the care of our veterans to. Just, it's par for the course for Team Obama. The worst people for the jobs that are critical. That's what Team Obama's all about. Get sycophants and yes men in there instead of the people that we need to be running these agencies. Sarah Palin had more to say at CPAC.
But when evil Islamic terrorists are on the march screaming Allah Akbar from Syria to Iraq to Libya and Yemen and the streets of Paris, well, it doesn't look like victory. The Middle East is a tinderbox and is coming apart at the seams. It's a death cult's playground. ISIS expands. It takes back land that we just spilled our blood to secure, with their ultimate goal of a caliphate that extends from Baghdad to Damascus to Jerusalem itself. Only in Egypt is jihad in retreat, and that is no thanks to the Obama administration. Remember, they supported the Muslim Brotherhood, which was finally toppled by the people in one of the largest popular revolts in history.
Yeah, the history is clear. Team Obama did back the Muslim Brotherhood over those who were trying to preserve Egypt. Last thing that Sarah said, this is a short bite, but one more tidbit.
The jihadists fight out of hatred. Hatred of Jews and Christians and women and diversity and freedom. Our troops, they fight out of love. Love of family and country and freedom.
That is a perspective that is all too often lost in Team Obama. One last thing. Carly Fiorina taking a swipe at the presumptive Democrat nominee.
And explain why we should accept that the millions and millions of dollars that have flowed into the Clinton Foundation from foreign governments do not represent a conflict of interest. She tweets about women's rights in this country and takes money from governments that deny women the most basic human rights.
Hillary Clinton have some splaining to do, as she and the Clinton Foundation are taking money hand over fist from these despotic regimes that oppress women around the globe. Not only that, it also came out in a, I think it was an Examiner piece this week, that Hillary pays her women staffers 72 cents on the dollar to what she pays men. Oh yeah, the war on women is alive and well, folks. It's on the Democrat side where it's always been. All right, we've heard from the ladies. We'll hear from the gents from CPAC. And we'll also talk a little Obamacare on the other side of the break, right here on the Blaze Radio Network.
Chris Salcedo Show. We'll be right back.
The Blaze Radio Network. Salcedo.
Mary Ramirez has been busy writing this week under the Salcedo Show banner. Go to theblaze.com and the contributor section. You will find her latest offering, Fatal Attraction: What Draws Women to Terror? I don't. Oh, man. Well, you guys have heard the reports about, you know, the girls going abandoning their Western lives and going and joining the jihad. Who in their right minds would think, oh yeah, I want to go out there and join the caliphate. I want to be treated like cattle and get a bomb strapped to my chest. Who does this? Mary Ramirez exploring that. Again, the contributor section. TheBlaze.com. Click on contributor and you'll find it. Fatal Attraction: What Draws Women to Terror? All right, I want to bring on the next guest. Obamacare has been a big theme today, folks, because it is the most egregious assault on our rights and liberties in the era of Obama. And so that's why I've dedicated so much time, as we have been witness this week, to attacks on every level, from the FCC's clamping down and basically bringing under government control the internet, to the banning of ammunition. And that's our Second Amendment, undermining our Second Amendment rights. And of course, Obamacare is that thorn in liberty's side that continues. I want to bring on Ed Hodson. He is a benefits consultant for Synergy Benefits. They help develop and implement cost-effective benefits programs for employers. They have clients all over the United States. Ed, welcome to the Chris Salcedo Show here on The Blaze.
Chris, thanks for having me on.
So the Supreme Court is going to hear the arguments about Obamacare. Now, what's at stake here is that that Obamacare was set up to force states to develop their own exchanges so that they could qualify for government subsidies to give to their citizenry, right? So this was a carrot that was put into Obamacare that would make governors of the various states think twice about poo-pooing away all of that government money, all of that taxpayer money that would be flowing into their coffers. All you got to do is set up an exchange, said Team Obama. Well, more than, I think it was 27 states have said, no, I don't think we're going to do that. So they didn't set up exchanges. And the letter of the law was clear that if you don't set up an exchange, if the state does not set up an exchange, it will not be, the people in that state will not be eligible for federal subsidies. Now, that's up before the Supreme Court because Team Obama's decided to give the subsidies anyway. So what I want to explore with you, Ed, is what happens if the Supreme Court decides that, you know what, the law says what it says, it means what it says, and those subsidies that Team Obama have given those people in those states that have not set up exchanges, they are unconstitutional, they are illegal, thus the federal government can't do that. What does day number one look like after that ruling comes down?
Well, I don't think, you know, that's a great explanation. I don't think anybody has, you know, a crystal ball to predict that. And the case King versus Burwell, you know, they're starting oral arguments actually next week. And so, you know, the whole case hinges on six words, which are in exchange established by the states. And so, you know, there are 16 states plus the District of Columbia that established, you know, a state exchange. And so what would happen is technically over 5 million people would lose their subsidy, and therefore they probably would not be able to afford their health insurance. And it could be, you know, extremely detrimental.
Well, no, that goes without saying, because Obamacare has driven up the costs of health care to such a degree, the only way people can afford it is to get federal subsidies. So if those are no longer available, you have millions upon millions of Americans who are in Obamacare who can't afford it, who cannot comply with a law that forces them to buy Obamacare. So what is to be done?
Well, you know, to your point, healthcare is, you know, buying health insurance is extremely painful. That's what we do. We try and help companies every day try and find and build affordable benefit programs for them. And so, you know, regardless, if the subsidies go away, it's going to have a dramatic impact on the middle-class Americans that are, for the first time, have access to affordable health care. Because if that goes away, the cost of getting sick is still expensive in this country. And so, unfortunately, you know, if you look at an article that was in the Los Angeles Times, they are predicting this would be have a huge impact from the standpoint of those people would leave the exchange. They would drop their insurance. Therefore, the people that need the insurance that have the highest costs are left. And then the insurance companies would become insolvent, and they would have, you know, a catastrophic impact on an already industry that has had a lot of, tremendous impact, since 2010 when this law went into effect.
Yeah, you know, the politics aside, because I can picture the next day, Ed, you know, Team Obama saying, these wascally Republicans are the ones who did this. And, of course, it's not any elected official. It's the folks on the Supreme Court who would be doing this, number one. But you know what? If it meant the demise of people I regard as the traitorous insurance companies, I'm all for it. I'm just hoping that because this law was so poorly written to begin with, and this is more evidence of it. The people who claim, you know, like Jonathan Gruber, to be the smartest people in the world, made this dang law, and it's so counter to human nature, and it's so counter to the benefit of the American people that it just, in a word, it sucks. It really does suck on every level. And it would be such poetry to see it go down in flames for the piece of garbage. And I've called it a crap sandwich from the very beginning to see it go down. Aside from the pain that it would cause everyday Americans, it just might take big government and the traitorous insurance companies with it. And so in my view, that would be well worth it, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, let's talk, you know, conspiracy theory here. So, the insurance companies have to file their rates with each state in May. And so for 2016, they have to file their rates. They're filing those rates based on the fact that they're fat and happy right now with, all these additional people that are buying health insurance. So if the Supreme Court, rules against ACA, then those people pull out. There's not as much, flow or money in the healthcare system. And then, therefore, the people, as I said before, that are left, that are using it, it could be the secret weapon to go back to, what Obama wanted originally, which was a single-payer system.
So, yes.
Sometimes you have to be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Ed Hodgson's – you know what? It's the DG that always gets me on your name. Hodgson is a benefits consultant with Synergy Benefits. They develop and implement cost-effective benefit programs for employers. You bring up a very valid point that Team Obama might say, well, you know what? This just shows that trying to work in the free market system doesn't work. Let's just go single payer. But see, here's the problem with that. And again, I'm not putting my confidence in the Republicans because they just don't have it. But it would take somebody with somewhat of a knowledge of a background to say, look, we got the HMO system courtesy of Ted Kennedy, a Democrat. Right. Then that system failed. And so here comes Obama saying, oh, he's got a better system. So he gives us Obamacare. And that's a failure. And so now here comes Obama again saying, OK, let's go single payer. What makes it? These folks don't have a good track record of managing health care. You know, the pendulum could swing hard the other way, saying, you know what? We ought to use health insurance the way we use car insurance. The big stuff is for insurance. The day-to-day stuff you pay for out of your pocket the way you do with car insurance.
Well, you know, that's how it was, you know, structured before HMOs with indemnity-based plans. And, you know, you were your own insurance company for the first, $500 or $1,000. And then you had, health insurance to offset whatever costs you had. And so, I think that both sides, the subsidies, whether you agree with them or not, they are helping people have access to something they couldn't afford, in the past. And the subsidies isn't fixing the overall problem. The overall problem is that, and what we see every single day when we're working with companies and we're helping people and our advocate is the cost is so much. You know, it's one thing to afford the health insurance. It's another thing to have to use it. right?
Right.
And what
adds to that cost? And if in it, at bare minimum, the health insurance industry itself adds 30% to the costs of medical care in this country. So again, another reason why the traitorous insurance companies are part of the problem.
Well, and that's, they are writing to the Department of Health and Human Services, trying to get the word out that, they obviously want subsidies to stick around.
Yes.
They have more people that they are insuring. And that was, part of this shell game was, the three-legged stool is that, the carriers were going to make more money because they were going to be able to insure more people. Well, to date, after this last open enrollment, there's approximately about 9 million people that enrolled through the federal exchange, and 53% of those were new enrollers. And so if the subsidies were to go away, based on the 34 states that have not set up an exchange, so it's roughly, 5.3, 5.4 million people that would lose a subsidy. And, it could be, the part of the stool that crumbles, and then federal health reform is chipped away. But
yeah, I'm tired of laws and rules that benefit the traitorous insurance companies. I'd like to give the American consumer the advantage for a change. Edward Hodson, he is a benefits consultant for Synergy Benefits. They help develop and implement cost-effective benefit programs for employers. Ed, if folks want to find out more about what you do, where can they go?
They can go to www.synergybenefits.com.
Synergybenefits.com. Thanks for carving out time for the Salcedo Show, bud.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, other side of the break, we'll hear from the guys at CPAC on the Salcedo Show.
You are listening to the Chris Salcedo Show, part of Generation Blaze on the Blaze Radio Network.
The Chris Salcedo Show.
All right, the guys at CPAC, I don't have time to get into a whole lot of detail, but let me give you some highlights. We'll start off with Bobby Jindal, who had a lot of good things to say. It was a great speech. I thought he did a better speech at CPAC than did Governor Scott Walker, even though Scott Walker is my favorite. Have a listen to Bobby.
I want to share something with you that brings no joy to my heart. I want to share something with you I don't say as a partisan, as a Republican, as a conservative, or for ideological reasons. I say this with a heavy heart. I genuinely do. President Obama has disqualified himself, but he's shown himself incapable of being our commander-in-chief. Now, why do I say that? These barbarians, they are murdering journalists for drawing cartoons they don't like. Beheaded 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians for their beliefs. Burned alive a Jordanian pilot. Killed over 100 school children and teachers in Pakistan. Put it all on social media as a recruiting tool. Murdering, killing, torturing Christians, Muslims, other religious minorities. This is what our president has to say. He says, we are not at war with Islam.
Well, okay, here's Benjamin Carson.
But, it's interesting to me how the left in particular loves to relabel and name things. For instance, if you're pro-life, then you're anti-woman. If you're pro-traditional family, then you're a homophobe. If you're white and you oppose a progressive black person, you're a racist. If you're black and you oppose a progressive agenda, you're crazy. And if you're black and you oppose the progressive agenda and you're pro-life and you're pro-family, they don't even know what to call you. I mean, you end up on some kind of watch list for extremists.
And so that's how it went. And you know what? Governor Scott Walker gave a great case for him seeking the Oval Office as well, because his track record in Wisconsin is so great. And again, we talked about Scott Walker in the beginning, how he ruffled some liberals' feathers about comparing the liberal protesters in Wisconsin to the jihadists by saying if he could stand up to the the folks who are the liberals in Wisconsin to get stand up to the jihadists. Don't forget, those liberals in Wisconsin, they threatened his family physically with violence. They threatened his wife, his children, his wife. One individual said that they would gut his wife like a deer if he didn't change his policies. Sounds an awful lot like Al-Qaeda to me. So just bear that in mind before you heap too much criticism on Scott Walker. All right, Slater Crusaders, look who it is joining me right now. Mike Slater up right after this program. Mike, how you doing, sir?
What's going on, Mr. Salcedo?
Not a lot. I got to admit to you, buddy. I got a little depressed earlier this week with this avalanche of left-wing extremism, this executive overreach. I mean, from the ammo to Loretta Lynch being approved to the FCC stuff. I know all the stuff near and dear to your heart, but what do you got coming up today?
Well, I thought you were going to say you were upset because of all the news last week about the Chargers possibly moving to Los Angeles. That's what I thought, the big news.
That's the big news
in San Diego, but I promise you we will not talk about that in the next 3 hours because no one else across the country cares. I want to talk about a speech that Joe Biden gave the other day that did not get a lot of attention, which directly violated the 10th commandment. So we will break that down coming up in just like 9 minutes or so.
You heard it. Slater Crusaders, Mike Slater in next. Make sure you stick around for it, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
All right, folks. I hope that you guys are able to keep in touch with me during the week on Twitter at Chris Salcedo TX, at ChrisSalcedoTX, and on the Facebook page. We will update you there with the goings-on of the Salcedo Show all week long. Again, the Chris Salcedo Show on Facebook. And remember this, folks. A society's worth is not measured by how much power is seized by an out-of-control federal government, but how much power is reserved for we, the people. Have yourself a great weekend. I'm Chris Salcedo, back here this same time next Saturday on the Blaze Radio Network.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.